Good morning and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone line, the email device, the Twitter machine, and the multitude of ways we have to communicate with ourselves nowadays, including Facebook. And one of our assembled multitudes today is really, really up on that. She is doing live interconnection even as we speak. But you can also join the conversation by phone. And the way you do that is by calling locally, 414-1234. If it's long distance, the number is 800-926-8809, or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org, or a tweet at WFSU Perspective. And hope you came out okay on the other side of what was Tropical Storm Irma. And thanks so much for those folks who kept in contact with us throughout that event. You know, Florida has lots of rivers. If you just check a map, the most cursory examination will show lots and lots of waterways crisscrossing this great state. Some of them, like the Miami River, kind of wind through densely urbanized areas, which is interesting. You've got others, like the Suwannee, that have inspired song, like the state song. We even have one of those rare northward flowing rivers, kind of like the Nile and the Monongahela, called the St. John's, which kind of got out of its banks here recently as a result of Irma. But few of Florida's rivers really have gained the affection and dedication of those who loved unspoiled wilderness and natural beauty more than North Florida's Apalachicola. So coming up on October 10th, we're going to have an intrepid group of paddlers, about 15 of them right now, who will be traversing just over 100 miles of the mighty Apalachicola. So this morning on Perspectives, we welcome a few of them, along with a gentleman whose life work is preserving, protecting, and defending this iconic waterway. And his name is Dan Tonsmere, and he's the Apalachicola Riverkeeper. Good to see you, Dan.
Good morning, Tom. Good to be here. Thanks.
Okay, we want to get an update on the mighty Apalachicola from you in just a second after we do the other introductions. You also brought your president of the board of directors of Apalachicola Riverkeeper, but her day job is Red Hills Awareness Initiative project manager, and her name is Georgia Ackerman.
Good morning, Tom. I'm so glad to be here.
Okay. We have a teacher as well. It's always good to have education first and foremost in these deliberations. And this is Cameron Barton, a science teacher at McClay School. Good to see you, Cameron.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And librarians come in handy, too, because they know how to do research. And we'll be delving into some of that today with Katie McCormick, research guide at FSU's Strozier Library and vice president of Apalachicola Riverkeeper Board. Hey, Katie.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having us here.
All right. Well, let's get back again to that 30,000-foot overview, Dan Tonsmere, of the Apalachicola. How's it going right now, especially in the wake of Irma? What did that do or did not do?
Well, it gave us a good bump in river flow. We were down around 8,000 to 9,000 cubic feet per second, and we're now over, or we're over twice that, up to about 22,000 cubic feet per second. So almost a little over double what the flow was, which was something that was needed. Salinity in the bay has continued to be low, and continued to be high, particularly on the bottom of the bay where the oysters and much of the marine life are. So that was good for us. We really drew the long straw from Irma. But we need our flow back on a more long-term basis. It often takes 2-3 years for recovery of the species in the bay after a long drought. And when we keep having these intermittent dry spells where the salinity of the bay goes back up, it doesn't give time for things to recover. So not looking great right now.
And I wanted to find out, since we talk about this every time you come on, you mentioned those daily river flows. How do you calculate that? There's no gauge you can stick in the river and say, oh, okay, it's this number of 1,000 cubic feet per minute or whatever. How do you figure that?
Well, it's actually measured on a gauge that the U.S. Geological Survey, Northwest Florida Water Management District work together. It's at Chattahoochee is the one that I refer to. A lot of people use the gauge at Bluntstown, which is looked at a different way. They look at feet on the gauge in Bluntstown, whereas the USGS and Water Management District gauge give us cubic feet per second. And it's rated by USGS going out and making detailed measurements at different flows through the year that calibrate the height of the gauge to how many cubic feet per second are going past the gauge. So it's just a really intensive monitoring events that they do to make sure that what the gauge is reading is correlated with a specific flow coming through the dam.
Okay, and that's how you also determine flood stages and stuff like that when you get a lot of water in there.
Yes.
Okay. George Ackerman, what makes the Apalachicola such a great river for paddlers?
Two words I use all the time, remote and magical. In terms of experiencing a place where you can paddle for days and not see boat traffic or maybe other people, it's very remote and magical in that sense. So the paddlers that join us for river treks, some have had that experience before and some have not. So every year we hear from people that participate on this five-day journey, multiple paddlers will say it was a life-changing experience for me because they get to experience the river from top to bottom and travel through that entire habitat. It's remarkable.
And that is 106 miles, I think, total?
Well, that's if you can go an exact straight line. None of us have ever really done 106. I'd say, argue, Katie, we've probably do 110, 115, but I'm not a data freak. I know some people will actually collect all of that information on their paddle and can tell you down to the stroke, but I tend to unplug and enjoy and just keep paddling.
Well, your fellow paddler here, Katie McCormick, this is one of the few, I guess, remaining rivers. We have some out west, I'm thinking the Colorado and some other things, where you can go for long stretches without any real civilization. But this is ours right here. You don't see a lot of urban area along the Apalachicola.
You don't see any. And as a transplant to the region who discovered St. George Island and the Apalachicola Bay as a tourist 25 years ago, and just having moved to Tallahassee 6 years ago, this will be my fourth river trek. I've paddled all over the country. And as George has said, it's magical. I've never been on a river that for the entire length of it, not only do you encounter people and small towns and communities that are out there supporting the river, living off of the river, but just the vast stretches where through the national forest, through private lands, you're not inundated with total development interruptions along the river in the ways that you see in so many other places around the country. It is a totally unique and magical space for the entire 107, 110 miles. And there's so much beyond the core river from its tributaries, swamps, all the backlands that even as we travel down, the opportunities that we're able to take to pull off, to hike up into Terrea from the water, to find springs along the way, to travel up Owl Creek. You could spend 2 weeks, 3 weeks out there and encounter new, seemingly untouched spaces that I don't think people anywhere else in the United States have an opportunity to engage in that, and it's right here in our backyard, and you could everybody could do that.
Well, Cameron Butler, obviously Katie McCormick is still suffering from a recent arrival culture shock here, but you are a long time North Floridian. What makes the Apalachicola special for you?
Wow, it goes way back. Family's been here for a long time. The coast and the bay and the rivers, the barrier islands. It's an absolute treasure, and it means so much to us. My grandmother's word is ongoingness, and the fact that this special place has been a part of our lives, our growing up, just very dear to a lot of our hearts. And it's really an amazing opportunity to be a part of this paddle this year. I'm super excited.
Okay. And it's also an endless source of diversion for your students out there at McClay, too. And I want to get into that in just a moment to talk about how this expands into the educational realm and what the kids think when you bring all this information about the Apalachicola and the diversity of biology and all these other wonderful things that are within this basin here. Heading towards a break, but first, Dan Townsmere, this isn't just for funsies. This is also a way to support Apalachicola Riverkeeper and its endeavors to preserve this whole area, right?
Absolutely. The Trekkers, as I refer to them fondly, are all outreach ambassadors for the river, obviously, but they are also raising money, each one connecting with their friends, family, associates, co-workers, the world, if you
random
look at some
the
of them, they're unabashed at asking for money to help us accomplish the work that we're doing.
And that work is educational. It is advocacy. It's a whole bunch of things, right?
Yeah, obviously, the more people that understand and experience the Apalachicola, they will, you know, love it, as you've heard these folks do. And, you know, the Apalachicola has a long history of being appreciated. You go back into the 60s, 70s, people back then were fighting for the Apalachicola, trying to protect it and preserve it. And we have a long list of both scientists and politicians and state workers that have really dedicated much of their life and career to letting everyone know how special and unique the Apalachicola is. It's like the third largest river feeding to the Gulf. So it has a huge impact on the eastern Gulf fishery, in addition to, you know, the high productivity that the bay has been known for all these years.
And historically, it also was a transportational source, as you alluded to. Before there was a U.S. 231 or Highway 27 or I-10, there was the Apalachicola, and it was a route of commerce through North Florida. We can talk about that, too, on the other side of this break. 414-1234, our number for Perspectives, talking about the upcoming Apalachicola River Trek and what this river means to us here in the North Florida and South Georgia area. 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Welcome back to River Radio on WFSU-FM. We are talking about the mighty Apalachicola River. It's kind of our mother waterway here in North Florida because Riverkeeper Dan Townsmere, you were just saying it is a primary source of fresh water to the Eastern Gulf.
Absolutely. 35% of the fresh water to the Eastern Gulf. And that, you know, has a measure that looks at nutrients as well, because the fresh water is carrying the nutrients both to the bay and out into the Gulf. So we get this huge source of energy into the bay that also goes out into the Gulf and helps nourish those offshore habitats where so many of the species that spend part of their life cycle as larval or juvenile stages in the inside the bay, when they go offshore, those habitats out there are likewise supported and nourished by that same freshwater nutrient source. So it's all one big ecosystem from the foothills of the Smokies 250, 300 miles out into the Gulf.
That is a huge drainage field, really.
And the fresh water is really the driver of it all. We start losing that, and that's what causes our issues and problems. So that's the fresh water is what's maintaining that ecological balance and function.
We talk about the quantity of the water. What about the quality?
Quality of our water obviously is good because we're taking oysters off the bottom of the bay, putting them on the boat, and essentially putting give them a little rinse, get the mud off, and put them on your plate and eat them. So water quality is it is closely monitored, and the bay is closed if we get a slug of water that is too turbid or carrying bacteria, and the bay is closed until that clears up. But generally, it's very good, and if there's a silver lining to have dams on your river, they catch those contaminants that are washing down out of Georgia.
Boy, you just hit on a controversial topic here. We could do a whole program on that one. Laurel connects with us here via email. She wants to know how the public can donate financially to the Riverkeeper cause.
I am so glad that we just got that question. Thank you.
This is Georgia,
can
by the way,
jump
guys.
In?
Sure.
Thanks for jumping in and asking that question. So to make a donation to River Trek, 100% of those proceeds do go directly to the organization. The paddlers are in a fun kind of competition, if you will, over who can raise the most funds. And so you'll be making a donation in the paddler's name, or you can do a support the whole team donation. So go to AppalachicolaRiverKeeper.org, and you'll see a link right at the top of the page, or you can do /RiverTrek as well, and you can meet all of the team members there and learn a little bit about why they're taking the time to do this and how they've been outworking in their communities. And we will be grateful for your donations. Our programs in outreach and advocacy and education and research are directly benefited by this campaign. It's our biggest campaign of the year.
Well, it is my understanding, at least there's a rumor on the street, that one of your prime fundraisers is named Cameron Barton. I don't know if that is true or not, but that's what I hear.
Well, fundraising comes, I don't want to say easy, but what does make it easy is the river, and the river speaks for itself. All the meaningful ways that everyone is connected to it. Lots of people care about this river, and they understand how important it is to donate and to keep this research and the science and the fight for the freshwater to keep all that going. So I appreciate all the support. I'm humbled by the people. The little money counts. The big money counts. It's going to a great cause.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little about how you use the Apalachicola River and the entire informational source of River Trek in the classroom. How does that work?
Great. I teach sixth grade science at McClay, and I've got a great team of teachers that are also teaching the curriculum. The resources that are available online for teachers all over are incredibly powerful. They're videos that really bring the stories to life. It lets the students really understand what we're studying. We've been studying the estuary, understanding the fresh and the salt, and the ways that we can monitor. We're going to get out there later this year at the end of the semester and let the students get their hands on and really understand what the importance of that is. We're going to try to get to see a prescribed burn to understand the importance of managing the forests and the longleaf pines and all the science behind dams and sharing water. And it's amazing what's out there. It's easy to teach because the kids are smart. They're out there. They want to be out there experiencing the water. And we've got the leaders of tomorrow in our hands, and they're listening, and they care, and it's really fun to be a part of that, instilling that curiosity and that passion in them.
Well, lessons not just for middle schoolers, but also for more advanced students, Katie McCormick. You have now in your position doing research there at FSU Strozier Library and all. What kind of lessons do you think there are for older folks when it comes to the Apalachicola and the fact that at some point, and remember, we're not making any more land, there will probably be more development pressures in that basin. Can we live with that, or should we throw up, I don't know, restrictions, or what do you think we ought to do?
Well, I just think there's endless opportunities for students and people of all ages when it comes to learning from the river. At Florida State University, there's been a great partnership with faculty in the College of Communication, Environmental Science, and the English Department to engage FSU students. I think over 130 students in the spring semester learned about the river, took field trips. Riverkeeper volunteers helped connect those students with research materials, as well as people who lived along the river. We led tours both on the water at different points in the river and also on the land. And time again, every one of the students that I encountered was just blown away that this river and the basin were right in their backyard. And whether they were from Tallahassee or they had moved up from elsewhere in the state or other parts of the country, their lives at FSU are so rich and full that many of them had never been beyond Tallahassee. And to get out in the environment in North Florida, I think it really changed their perspective. I think we often assume in the world and the society that we live in that we need total development in order to have economic viability, to have social viability, that communities must have new construction, new enterprises, all new. But I think that is it's a misperception, that the protection of the Apalachicola River, the basin, the entire corridor, the preservation and restoration of that corridor to help enhance the lives of the people who live along the river, to bring back longtime industries, Tupelo honey, the things that make our environment and our space unique. I think a lot of that is dependent on not being overdeveloped. We have a lot of places people can live. We have a lot of places people can work. We should work to protect those spaces that, as pristine as the river corridor is, once it's gone, it's gone. And we've already seen huge impacts in the oyster industry, in the Tupelo honey industry, in logging and other things, that if we just assume we can tear out all the trees and build more houses or buildings or businesses, we will never be able to recuperate those spaces.
In case you're just joining us, 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809. And I want to throw in also, it's 850-414-1234. We got to get to the 10-digit numbering system because so many people now are using wireless devices to call in, or they may be watching our live stream and calling in from, who knows, Possum Kumquat, Rhode Island, it may happen here. And we are talking with the Apalachicola Riverkeeper, Dan Townsmere, and some board members of Apalachicola Riverkeeper and members of the upcoming trek down the Apalachicola that will kick off on October 10th and go the whole way south. It's 106 miles as the crow flies or as the sturgeon swims, but it's going to be a little bit longer than that, Georgia.
I was just reflecting on the question you asked about the metropolises that we'll be traveling through. We kick off, we launch in Chattahoochee, and then we travel downriver. We get to pit stop in Bristol and Bluntstown and Wewahitchka, and then we finally make it into the biggest town of them all, Apalachicola, on a Saturday morning. So in terms of the river being remote and magical, as we said before, it really is, and the small communities along the way that we get to visit and stop at and maybe meet some elected officials and community members, it's really exciting to participate that. The river flows through big stretches of land like Apalachicola National Forest and a lot of protected areas, and I think we've learned, as Katie was saying before, because many of those lands are protected, that has helped the health of the river and added to the uniqueness of that. Apalachicola National Forest is our biggest national forest in the state. So North Florida is a pretty remarkable place.
Okay. And Cameron Butler, you wanted to jump in there, and then we'll go to Dan.
Katie was talking about perhaps the beauty of the river needs to remain simple. And I had a very astute student just yesterday. We were talking about the history of the river and the Native Americans that were there. There's some mounds right there at the Chattahoochee Landing where we'll begin on October 10th. But the student, I could see her thinking deeply, and she paused and she said, you know what? Those Native Americans, they had everything that they needed. And do we really need all this stuff in our lives? And thinking about all the technology and the buildings and the clothes and the, and it, that just brings it back that the simple stuff in life is out there for us to enjoy if we can manage it and take care of it and let it be there for generations to come.
And you brought up something, and it's Barton, I'm sorry. The simplification that a lot of people are now reconnecting with, even folks in the millennial generation are going, my gosh, we don't need all the stuff that mom and dad accumulated, and you know, we don't want to think about it, but when they move on, what are we going to do with all their stuff?
That's part of the joy, I know, in terms of me looking forward to River Trek. 5 days, the phone doesn't work. I don't turn it on anyway unless I have to, but in stretches of that, people, we tell people the phone doesn't work, or the phones don't work out there. They don't, kids. We're off the grid. There's, you know, we're camping on sandbars. We're, you know, brewing our coffee outside in the morning, and we're sleeping in tents or hanging from the trees. Some of us are will be sleeping in that style, but it's the unplugging and the reconnecting with nature that makes it really special. And that's when you get the deeper understanding of how this whole river system works and how we connect as humans. And it helps people understand it more fully and want to protect it. And man, if we could get every kid in Florida out on the Apalachicola River, because we know that people will protect what they love and understand and fight for it. And that's why we do what we do.
Well, you mentioned elected officials. Now, you get enough of them there, maybe that could be included in some kind of mandatory statewide curriculum that you got to get to the Apalachicola at least once between kindergarten and 12th grade. And who knows?
Sure.
Other things have been included in the curriculum. Why not this, for crying out loud?
You can read about something. You can hear about something. It's very different when you go and get your feet wet in something and have that kinesthetic experience with it.
Yeah, but Dan Townsman, you don't have to be, I mean, an avid river trekker and a paddler and a wilderness enthusiast. I mean, anyone can enjoy the Apalachicola at multiple levels, right?
Absolutely. There's hiking, birding, hunting, fishing, you know, just hanging out on the sandbars for a weekend. There's a huge variety of experiences you can have along the river at all different river stages. You know, we go through a low flow all the way up to flood stage, and so you obviously have to pick your time, but there is so much to see and do out there. It has obviously the highest biodiversity of documented of any river system in North America. So it's a very cool place. And all of the discussion about protecting this floodplain and that, I just have to say we are so lucky to have the opportunity right now. There is a proposal for a conservation easement over almost 40,000 acres of the floodplain, which fills in a gap of most of the floodplain that is not owned by the state or the federal government or under some other kind of conservation easement. And so we're co-sponsoring that with the Nature Conservancy. You know, the TNC has their Bluffs Preserve at Allen Bluffs, in a beautiful place. And so they have developed this project, and we're working with them to try to get the state to pay the landowner for an easement. We're not a fee simple where they're actually buying the land, but it just allows them to continue to do the traditional logging that has gone on the property in the floodplain. So it stays on the tax rolls and is still a benefit to the local governments, but it gives it a level of protection that we won't see the kind of development that Katie was referring to that takes some of that experience.
Yeah, and there's something in it for the landowner, too. I mean, there's certain, you know, really critical tax advantages to those puppies. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, but that's being teed up for the 2018 session then, or?
Well, it will be – it comes before the Acquisition and Restoration Council. October 20th is the final vote to put it on the list, and then they will prioritize the list. And so we're hopeful that the Apalachicola will remain such a high priority that it will get considered for funding right off in 2018.
Terrific. Okay, we'll be watching that for sure here. Georgia Ackerman, just for the benefit of folks who say, I can't even imagine a river trek, give us a quick thumbnail from Chattahoochee all the way down to Apalachicola. What takes place during one of these?
Well, I'm going to invite Katie to jump in at any time. So it's a five-day paddle. We average about 20, 24 miles a day. Ooh, sleeping on sandbars. We have some fabulous volunteers that show up with really good food, and we have sponsors like Taste Buds and other folks that bring this food to us at night. And so we eat and eat and eat at night because we've been out paddling all day. We get hot, so we stop and take a swim. We get sore, so we stop and take a stretch break on a sandbar. Guest speakers show up and teach us things and help us understand more about the river. Folks like Katie, who this is her fourth year down the river, we have a continuum of people of knowledge, so they'll share in their experiences and do some interpretive guiding for us as well. So it's a bit of a pep rally, and it's a lot of learning, and it's a ton of fun. We get exhausted and energized simultaneously. That's been my experience. Katie might like to add to that.
I think that's a perfect description of it. Over the course of the years, so this is my fourth paddle in a row, and I can say you start out in the morning, and you vaguely know many of the people that you're paddling with.
Hold that thought for just a second here. We got to take this quick time out, and then we'll be back and continue our trek down the mighty Apalachicola River here on River Radio Perspectives today. 414-1234-800-926-8809 if you want to join the conversation, and we'll be right back. Back on Perspectives, talking about the upcoming River Trek, which kicks off Tuesday, October 10th from fabulous Chattahoochee. I'm sure Rhett Devane, who is the Lord High Headmistress of that community, will be there to give you all send-off. And we'll talk about other opportunities for folks to help do that as well. Quick reminder, though, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to our website, click on Radio, hit Programs, and then pull down Perspectives. We try to archive our shows here within usually 24 hours after the program actually appears on the radio, so you can go back and listen to it again. And Katie McCormick, I didn't want to interrupt you there, but didn't want you to be stepped on by our break. So you're talking about what is just so appealing to you during this experience here.
Thank you, Tom. So to start out in Chattahoochee and paddle those 5 days down to Apalachicola, this being my fourth year on the river, folks might think that gets boring year after year, that it's the same trip. But each year the river is a different river. The group, as we start out on Tuesday morning, some of us know each other well, others of us don't know each other at all. And you spend that 5 days journeying together, learning and observing, and sometimes just being. There are times when you're in a lot of conversation because you're paddling for 8 or 9 hours a day. There are other times when you get, you're sort of on your own and quietly contemplating how tired you are or how beautiful the surroundings are. And I've often reflected when I've reached Apalachicola that not only at the end of that 5 days do I end on a different river that I began on, and whether that's metaphorically because the water's been flowing under my boat the entire time, but more than that, it's because each day and each moment on the river and with friends, new and old, that I've been on river trek with, I'm always a new person because I've learned so many different things by the time we reach Apalachicola. And it is definitely a thing that keeps me coming back and raising money to support Riverkeeper because it's a pretty magical experience overall.
We always use that term, life-changing, and just it's almost like a throwaway, but it sounds like this truly is a life-changing experience.
I was invited to paddle in 2011 with River Trek and wasn't serving on the board at the time. I was a member of the organization, knew a little bit about what Riverkeeper did, and a kayak camping trip. That sounds cool. I want to do that. And so I said yes. And since that time and experience in the river, I had been on the river before, but not in that full top to bottom with a group of people kayak camping. And it truly was a connection that I can't probably describe in words, but it does, if you have the opportunity to go back, just like Katie said, it's different every time. And the group of people that you get to experience with really makes it magical. And the wildlife that you might see in the different temperature and the water might levels will be different. So you have all these fabulous experiences that, again, remind you why you want to protect this for generations to come. And that's what—that's the message we hear. This year, the group of paddlers that we have, nearly half of them are from other places outside of the immediate, what we call the riparian counties, counties connected to the river, or the Tallahassee area. That's really exciting. We've got paddlers from Metro Atlanta down to South Florida, and some of them have not had that experience. So I'm really, really excited. I'm happy to be getting to experience the river trek with them, so that we'll get to see some of it through their eyes for the first time, too. So that really has me jazzed.
Yeah. Go ahead, Cameron.
I'd like to make a shout out to Tommy Thompson, one of our leaders. He and his team have done a really great job of getting us prepared, teaching us about safety on the boat. It's really, really critically important to understand the group and the group dynamics, and to know that being on the water, it can be dangerous, but they've done an excellent job with really teaching the first-timers, or the newbies, about what to look for, the camping gear lists, the paddling lists. Anyway, they make it easy to be a part of this team. I was scared about fundraising at the beginning, and it's really come fairly easily because of the generous folks. So anyway, it's a neat time to be involved. This is the 10th year of River Trek, I believe.
Correct. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary of River Treks, so it's an exciting time.
Maybe it's time for an alumni reunion. What do you think, Dan?
Every year is a good time.
Well, we had mentioned earlier that at one time the Apalachicola was a commercial waterway. I recall the barge traffic up and down and Army Corps of Engineers going in and doing dredging. And Grayson just emailed us. He wants to know the pros and cons of dredging. Is there still commercial traffic on the Apalachicola, or is that gone now?
There is the opportunity for commercial traffic. There's not much, maybe one or two barges a year. What the situation is now is when Colleen Castile was Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, the state of Florida denied the Corps' permit to continue dredging and disposing of the material. The disposal was a big part of the problem because they were blocking off sloughs and covering up floodplain habitat in that. The Corps still has a permit to do limited snagging along the river, much different than what they used to do, but enough so that they can make a safe channel for traffic to get up and down the river.
Dan, what's snagging? Explain it for folks
snagging,
who don't know
what it is. Logs fall in the river, trees fall in the river and float down and hang up on sandbars or whatever. And so those are snags that literally get snagged on bars or bends in the river or whatever. And so they will just come and make sure that the more dangerous snags are out of the way so that traffic can go up and down the river safely. I forget the question he asked was
just the pros and cons of dredging.
The way we approach this is that dredging has been very degrading to the ecosystem. The Corps has been unable to do it in a way that it doesn't have significant impacts. So what we have taken the position is that the Corps should release enough flow so that there's a season when barge traffic can get up and down the river so they don't have to dredge. But the critical traffic, the high value traffic, can still make its way up and down, and that release of water to float the barges, so to speak, if they can do that at the right time of year, so it's flooding and inundating the floodplain, hydrating the fish habitat so that it works in unison with the ecological functions, it's a win-win for everybody. The Corps has tried to do that, but they keep focusing more on barges than on the ecology, and so we're still trying to get them to come around. The Corps has been, they were born in a time when we were trying to conquer and control Mother Nature, very different than we are today, when we have so much a better understanding that we need to protect those ecological functions that are critical to all life on Earth, human, wildlife, plants, and that. So they need to come into the 20th century with the rest of us, or 21st century, and learn to work with nature, protect those ecological functions, and provide the amount of access and ability for the barges to make it up the river for those critical shipments that they may need to get up and down the river.
You may need to recruit some of the Corps leadership for a river trek.
Go ahead, Cameron.
Tying into thinking about the river and how it's changed over time, it's one of the common themes for my science class is making use of some of the technology, the old maps, looking at the old maps, the newer maps, the GIS technology, the geographic information systems. It's a really incredible way to tap into the students' interests, really, you know, real-time science, looking at how that river has changed. It's wild to see the oxbows and the straightening, and, you know, looking at the dredging, and the kids think it's fantastic to have a sand mountain to slide down. But we think about a little bit deeper, what's that doing to the ecology of the place and the habitat. So anyway, lots of great teaching opportunities with this river. So I encourage that for all teachers out there.
Don't the kids have a million questions, particularly in sixth grade. What are you most often asked when you bring this up?
Can we have a field trip?
yes. Take them all to the river. I volunteer.
They really want to get out there and see it and do it and know it and live it. And so something's working in the education system that they care, and I'm excited.
Yeah, and that's almost talk about endangered species. The school field trip, which used to be so common, is now so rare, not just because curriculums have changed, but it's so expensive, and now parents have to foot the bill. I remember when schools actually just said, load everybody on the bus and take them somewhere, and that doesn't happen anymore.
I think when, with our outreach, advocacy, education, research focus, one of our team members, the Apalachicola National Estuarine Research Reserve, they offer some really great field trips out there to let the kids do some water quality monitoring and, you know, some of the higher science that's real. And these are jobs that these students can have later on. So we're kind of lighting the fire in terms of the students thinking about possibilities of lifelong, you know, cool outdoor jobs that, hey, I can get paid for this. So I think we're really sparking some interest, and it matters.
Well, George Ackerman, you brought up, too, the number of folks from outside this area who are going to be participating in this river trek, mm-hmm. from Metro Atlanta, from South Florida, mm-hmm. for all that. And back to that economic development thing, which does not necessarily mean a whole bunch of new businesses and mattress stores and that kind of thing. What does the river hold as far as positioning this part of the country as a nature-based tourism destination, let's say?
I think Apalachicola as a city demonstrates that quite well. I mean, it's a community that people frequently visit because of its proximity to the beach, St. George Island, Carrabelle, all these places that people like to explore. They enjoy the small town atmosphere. We hear that frequently, and if you've visited Apalachicola, you know that. So that is an economic driver, and so we know that industry has tremendous potential, particularly the nature-based businesses as well. So by protecting our resources and sharing them and educating people on them, it just contributes to the health of both our economy as well as our well-being. So I see it as a win-win. I was smiling before because Cameron was talking about her middle school students, and Katie and Dan and I worked on the Apalachicola River Project in partnership with FSU, and we had a similar experience with the college students. You know, we were kayaking with them out at Lake Seminole. We took them hiking at the Nature Conservancy. Dan took students to do water quality sampling and boat tours down on the lower river. We were all a bunch of little kids. We were all excited. We were, you know, learning and having fun, and that type of learning we know is lifelong. We had partners that helped us with the field trips. Nobody turned us down. You know, we asked, for example, we asked Jim Cox at Tall Timbers, hey, would you do a birding trip and take these students out in the ANF? And Sierra Club partnered with us. So many people care and want to protect this place and will contribute resources and time, like this River Trek team, like these volunteers that come in. And that energy just keeps us doing what we're doing. And Cameron's smiling and grinning and shaking her head, and Katie and Dan are too. And that's because, again, we know that if we continue sharing that energy and knowledge, it benefits us all. And, man, having the kids excited about it and wanting to protect it is really as an extra layer this year for us.
Okay, any more partners, Katie McCormick, you're thinking of that can be brought in this? Obviously, you have educators who are locked into this, the folks who live in the small communities throughout the river basin. They're stoked about this, too. But who else could be leveraged to bring in additional resources to help out Dan and Riverkeeper and this entire effort to try to maintain this little piece of heaven that you guys love so much?
Everybody? That's a great question, Tom. And I joke a little bit, but I do think that the power and the impact of the Apalachicola River and its basin have really far-reaching possibilities. I think our community members here in Tallahassee, folks who hunt, who fish, who enjoy the outdoors, those who just have an interest in the history and culture of our area. But Riverkeeper itself, and we've had river trekkers from as far away as Missouri at different points in time. I think the tourists who come through the corridor, who start out going to the beach at St. George Island and surrounding areas and find themselves on a Riverkeeper for Saturday paddle further upriver, who are exposed to the beautiful biological diversity and peace of the entire basin, they find themselves coming back again and again and again, not just to sit at the beach, but to really engage with the community, to spend money, to support the preservation and restoration of the river. And I think that there's no end in possibility to build support for what is really truly a national treasure. I think that we have national recognition as the Apalachicola River last year was unfortunately named the number one most endangered river in the United States. That the work Riverkeeper is doing right now to emphasize local advocacy, but to really bring national attention to the issues of the Apalachicola River and the basin, because it's not just a North Florida thing. It really connects to a whole variety of constituents across the country. And I think that's an important thing that river trekkers and as we think about those people who can help advocate for this river and who can help raise money or contribute money to the efforts of the Riverkeeper, that really is that broad of a reach.
Not long after we worked through our FSU project, Chipola College contacted us, and they wanted to do a similar restoration type effort along the river. So we're engaging with them. And George and I have been plotting, I think is might be the word, for a boat that we can take a group of students. So we could take the local high schools along the river, or you know, within a certain area, to have them experience the river at least on a short day trip, you know, half a day or something like that, just to get out there and get their feet wet and see up close and firsthand what it's like.
Yeah, and Katie mentioned the Four Saturday Paddles, which are a really popular program, and we do a variety of episodic field trips during the year. So I'd encourage people to go to our website and get signed up for our email, and that again is AppalachicolaRiverKeeper.org. We do the Four Saturday Paddle is a beginner-friendly trip that we do that's a ton of fun as well.
Guys, it's been wonderful. Happy River Trek, everyone. 10th anniversary, Dan Townsmeer, Georgia Ackerman, Katie McCormick, and of course, Cameron Barton. Thank you all for coming on to Perspectives Day and talking about the Apalachicola.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
And we invite you to tune in next week to our program when we will have more informed opinion and, of course, your input too, right here on Perspectives.